So one of the things that I've really enjoyed has been doing the mantra chanting on this retreat, and we've done mantra chanting to Amitabha from that very first evening, and then also Green Tara and Avalokiteshvara, and they're all part of Amitabha's lotus family, the family of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, particularly associated with compassion. So I think it's really important, as we were talking yesterday, that you can't really separate the breath and the body from the heart. And we, right from the beginning, Paramahansa was emphasizing the importance of valuing ourselves, caring about ourselves, participating in the world. Care and compassion for other living beings and for the planet. So I think it wasn't that we consciously thought of that, but I think it's very appropriate that these are the figures that we've had, and I think we'll continue to have, that we can call on and inhabit their realms. And I suppose I was thinking at this particular point in the retreat, it does feel for me like it went quite deep quite quickly, but probably for some of us, we're hitting some challenging stuff. I know usually for me, at least one point in the retreat, I hit a lot of difficult stuff, and maybe I hit some anxiety and fear and resistance. And people sometimes say it's around the third day, which I guess this is it? I can't add up. This is the third or the fourth day anyway. But whenever it happens, I think it's good to meet that with kindness and compassion. So earlier this morning, we had a long period of chanting Avalokiteshvara's mantra. And I suppose one of the things that always strikes me about the stories, the myths around Avalokiteshvara is the one about the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara, who, in a way, was so so confident in being able to achieve his desire to sort of free everybody from suffering and whatever, that he made this vow that if he, if he doubted himself, if he flagged, may his body shatter into 1,000 pieces and his head into, I think it was 10, actually, and then Amitabha put him back together again when that inevitably happened and put his own head on top. So they're very closely related, but it made me think that actually it's very easy for us to bring all our goals, all our unrealistic expectations and habits and patterns into our meditation, into our retreats. And that whole thing of the ego wanting to take control or thinking it can control things. I can't remember the exact phrasing, but I think on the second day, one of the things Paramahansa said was something about the ego actually isn't in control of anything. It likes to think it is, but it isn't really. And that's what causes us a lot of dukkha, I think. So for me, there's something about just sort of letting go and surrendering. And it seems for me that what helps me in that process of surrendering, that ego wanting to be in control, is through devotional practice and through connecting to these bigger figures. And just in meditation, just in mantra chanting, there's a sort of surrender that can happen that's not even conscious as well. So I know that Paramahansa made a distinction between what he called devotional mantra chanting and meditative mantra chanting. I think for me, the two are always the same, actually. There may be some that are happening in a more devotional context, like a ritual, but there's always, even if I'm just in a more meditative state, doing it as a practice with just repeating a mantra, it's still a devotional practice for me. So we're going to do some more mantra chanting. So basically, this next period, we're going to have maybe 10 minutes of mantra chanting and 10 minutes of just sitting before we go into the Q&A. And Paramananda, if you're happy to start us off again, I'd like to do the green Tara mantra again in call and response. And I think it's good to bring in green Tara at this point because, again, very much a figure of compassion, and she's there if we call on her. And particularly if we're hitting any anxiety and fear, she helps us with those. So, over to you, Paramananda.
Okay, Paramananda. There's my mala. I'm going to hum a little tune first. Sorry.
That's fine. I must say, what you said this morning, it had this line from this really old song, and I don't know what song it was, but it's, there's a red one, and a blue one, and a green one, and a yellow one, and they all live in little boxes. Little boxes all the same. I don't know where that comes from. But anyway, that was inspired by your talk this morning.
Well, that's, anyway, yes, moving on. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Swaha.
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 Om Tare Tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, tutare tue suo.
Om tare, tutare tue swaha.
Om tare, Tutare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu tare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu es suam. Om tare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu es suam.
Om tare tu tare tu es va.
Om tare tu es suam. Om tare tu es suam. Okay. So, not sure why I'm getting an echoey thing, but yeah, just coming back to the shared space, maybe taking in who's here. And yeah, open the space if anyone has anything they want to share or ask. Millie.
Hi, good afternoon, Paramananda. This is Millie. In our group, we were wondering what psyche is. Is it intuition? Is it the soul? Or it is the knowing, beyond knowing? Can you just explain to me and to us, please?
Well, in the ancient Greek tradition, it is more or less used interchangeably with the word soul. I think what it kind of means is the rest of your, well, I suppose it means mind in its broadest sense, in a way. So, you know, we have our conscious mind, don't we? We have our, which, you know, which is sometimes compared to a kind of iceberg, you know, it's a little bit of our mind that's kind of visible to us, accessible to us in a self-aware way. And the great kind of body of the mind is sort of somewhat submerged, you know. And I suppose it's that part of us that and in most traditions, including Buddhism, this would be understood as having both an individual and a kind of collective or even cosmic dimension to it. Some of it is sort of ours, but we could also say some of it is our history, our ancestors, our species, you know. So we sort of part is, yeah. So I mean, it's really referring to mind in its most expansive meaning, in a sense, you know. So. I mean, unfortunately, well, I don't know that it is unfortunate. I mean, I think we should regard it as a sort of poetic concept rather than a technical one. So any attempt to sort of pin it down is going to be rather frustrating, I think, for us. But I think from our point of view, you know, you have some access to it, don't you, when... Well, both in dreams, but I was also thinking when you're moved by something, if you're moved by music or you're moved by art, you're moved by story or you're moved by nature, it's some part of you resonating with something else, isn't it? I think this is one way we can understand psyche. It's more or less our way we resonate with the world in a funny sort of way, or the way it resonates in us, but in a sort of rather hidden or, yeah. I don't know if that helps, Millie. I mean, it's obviously, you know, it's a word we get psychology from, but We could talk about it, but I can't really, you know. I think it's fine to think of it as soul, but not in the sense of an eternal soul. Well, it certainly wouldn't be understood as that in the Buddhist tradition. Yeah.
Thank you, Paramananda.
Does that help at all?
Yes, I took few notes, so I'll I'll consolidate them to send it to Yona.
I think all of us have a sort of feeling, don't we? For instance, our families, our ancestors, our race, our country, all of these things sort of resonate with us in a certain sort of way. And I think in addition, it's sort of against this idea that we come into the world blank. You know, it's sort of what comes into the world with us in a way. Yeah. That's already kind of within the mind, which then certain parts of it might get sort of activated. As we go through life, you know, in different ways. So it's more just like when, for example, if you have children, that kind of activates a certain part of you that seems to be there but needs activating in a way. Or you know, lots of different examples. That's one that sprung to my mind then, but I suppose you could also say it's what's there when what's left when the ego consciousness sort of gives up a bit. What are you left with?
I have a question. It's Rebecca speaking, Paramananda. I came onto this retreat having quite a tough time, and I thought coming would be a good opportunity to be with the difficulties. And that's within my personal experience has faded, and I'm experiencing a lot of pleasure, and I'm a little there's a little corner of my mind a bit confused, sort of saying, oh, should be working with this difficult stuff that's been going on, but actually the experience I'm having is a pleasure experience. I don't know quite how to ask the question, but that's my situation.
Yeah, well, yeah. Make the most of it, I would.
Yeah.
And I will. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, you know, we have this idea of sort of dealing with things, don't we? Or that we need to confront things, or we need to deal with things. I'm not so sure about that these days myself. I think the best we can do quite often is to try and just maintain a sort of balance and aligned and positive thing. I don't know, you know, it's hard, isn't it? Those different things are appropriate at different times, but I wouldn't push the river in a way, you know, I'd go with what's going on, you know, just go with what's going on, you know. I wouldn't overthink it and think, well, this, I think that's a lot of what we do in meditation. We're trying to learn to sort of go along with what's actually going on rather than what we think should be going on or what we'd like or dislike to be going on. I don't know. So I would just sort of try and relax and, as I say, enjoy it, but just sort of go along with it. Go along with what's happening, really. I don't know if Birdie Lee's got anything she wants to add to that.
Well, I think if we are experiencing pleasure and joy, it's always good to stick with it and absorb it and, as you say, make the most of it. It's positive mental state, and the absence of the other stuff is positive as well. And I think I used to be like so. I always had to be on the rock face dealing with the most challenging stuff. But actually, why? It just makes you miserable and it doesn't necessarily help. And sometimes actually being in a positive state helps us to sort of loosen or let go of something or come at it from a different perspective or at least come at it from a different energy, you know. So I would just say if that's happening, then do. I mean, I always love the fact that, you know, joy is an enlightenment factor, you know. So, and it's, yeah, it is interesting, isn't it, that if we're receptive and we're not fixed, because sometimes we can have an idea of what we're expecting to experience and we almost kind of create that through that expectation. But when we're a bit more open, then we can be surprised, can't we? And, that gladdening the mind, liberating the mind. It sounds like your mind is being glammed at the moment, so that's great. And there's something quite freeing about that, isn't it? And at least at the moment, you're free from the sort of more difficult, challenging stuff than maybe. Yeah. And for me, it's one of the things that's so amazing about meditation and practice is that whatever can be going on in your life, that it's possible to actually experience what's going on in your life and still be able to be in positive mental states, you know. I think, and that was it was a big surprise when I first experienced that, and again it felt like very liberating, and I have to be reminded of that from time to time when I get sucked down rabbit holes or into the drama of all the things that are difficult in my life. But I can just sit down and actually get into quite a positive mental state if I allow that to happen. And when I do allow that happen and allow myself to actually be with it, then often I can come back out of it into the situation in a different way. So that's all a very lengthy and wordy way of saying it. I totally agree with Paramananda.
Thank you both. Yeah, that's really clear. Thank you.
Hello, this is Natalie Joelle here.
Hi, Natalie.
Thank you all so much. I have a question about speech, and I wonder if you could say something about what speech means in body, speech, and mind, how that can be interpreted, thinking about the breath and all the different sounds we make. Thank you.
That's a big question. I suppose the most obvious, and not necessarily what I think you're getting at, is that in terms of Buddhism, we have actions of body, speech, and mind. So, you know, what's happening in our mind and what we choose to do, where we choose to dwell, how we choose, you know, how we bring awareness or kindness and things like that to our experience, that's part of our actions of the mind, heart, mind, I guess. And speech, in a way, is how we communicate often with others, isn't it? Or put things into words. There are a lot of things can't be put into words. But you're talking also about sounds and things, because I think we communicate in lots of ways that aren't actual words. And in terms of sound, well, obviously there's music, which communicates on a completely different level, even though some of it has words, but it doesn't always have words. But it's a very deep, profound way of communicating, isn't it? And how we respond to the sounds around us. But I'm not completely sure what you're getting at with your question. Do you want to say a little bit more?
Can I say something?
Sure, yeah.
I was just thinking, I think one of the reasons why it's so, it is very strongly emphasized in Buddhism, particularly in a kind of precept, the Buddhist kind of ethics, speech is very, I think there's a kind of, it occupies this kind of, again, it occupies a kind of middle way between mind and body. It's a sort of bridge in a way between mind and body, and it's also a bridge between, because it's both a physical activity, yeah, but it's got an underlying mental intention usually, which might or might not be conscious. So, you know, we're in pain, we might make sounds that kind of involuntary, but are still communicating something. I think ethically it's so important because it's one of the major ways we interact with the world, certainly the human realm, other people. So if we falsify speech, if we speak in a false way, in a way we're doing we're kind of violating that. There's a sort of undermining of trust, I think. There's an undermining of it. And no wonder if that then works back on us. So I think there's this, it is a complex area, but I think how we present I wonder what the, how we present ourselves to the world, and if the further away we go from how we actually are, the less truthful the way we present ourselves to the world. I think that's very undermining to us as well as to society in general, in a way. I don't know if that makes sense to people, but that's why I think this whole social media thing is quite, one has to be very careful where You know, it's very often this presentation of a false self. You know, we're putting on, like putting on the face, isn't it? You know, it's the way we project ourselves out into the world. So, you know, what's happening if we're projecting a false self out into the world? Does it actually then undermine our own sense of self, our own sense of our own authenticity? I think it's a very nuanced and difficult area, but I think it is really important somehow, yeah. And I think the only other thing I'd say about it is sometimes it's not until we speak that we know what we think. You know, there's something about the action of actually verbalizing something that it makes us more conscious of ourselves as a way of bringing things in. We were talking about psyche earlier, weren't we? You know, this whole tradition, it's not so much that don't get it now. Only people like, I'm thinking that you still used to get it in the Rasta tradition of ranting, and this sort of ranting where, or prophecy, this whole sort of tradition of allowing the body to speak, and by doing so, some unknown things are brought into consciousness, you know, brought into the world in a way. You know, it's a bit esoteric, isn't it? But on a more mundane level, I think it's quite often only when we actually start speaking that our thoughts become clear to ourselves. As you know, sometimes we just have to risk opening our mouths and see what comes out, don't we?
Mm.
And actually that can be very useful. I mean, you've got to be a bit careful with that, but it can be very useful in it.
Mm.
I mean, it's interesting that the whole of modern psychology is really based on what was originally called, you know, Freudian therapy was originally called the speaking cure, wasn't it? It was just getting people to speak, you know, and through speaking they became aware of themselves. I don't know, it's a very interesting area.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I think we do need to stop for that. It's almost 5:30. So thank you all again for coming and practicing, and for those of you who shared with us something in this space. And just to say that tomorrow we won't be having the Q&A session. We're going to be having, you know, just a period of practice after the groups. And I think we probably will do the same on Thursday. We'll see what emerges. But in the meantime, yes, we'll have the meditation at 8, and then I'll be using a session at 10:30 tomorrow, and we'll have another session at 4 again. And I think what has been very clear just from things that people have said or shared or being in the groups is that I think for a lot of us, we are going quite deep. So just, you know, a bit of self-care around that. Paul Mando, you want to say anything?
No, I don't think so. No.
Okay.
Have a nice evening.
Sure.